Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is presented by New York Mutual Trading.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one of your hosts, Darren Bresnitz. I hope everyone out there is staying safe and washing their hands. We know it is a very odd and sometimes confusing time, but please make sure to read the news, check your local medical listings, and just be smart about staying safe. Also, if you can, please support your local restaurants, businesses, anyone like that. They're struggling a lot right now, and some of them will not make it through this pandemic without the support of people like you, even if it's getting a coffee, ordering a taco, maybe just stopping in to say hi, even getting some toast, something small. And if you can tip, you know, a lot of these people are going to need everyone to come together. And if you can, please help support your local business. We have a great episode with Min Phan from Porridge and Puffs. It's one of our favorite new restaurants, relatively new, that's in the Hi-Fi area of Los Angeles. We talk about serving the neighborhood, building a local community, and also the beauty of the solo diner. And then we dig deep into the archives for one of our favorite performances from Sin Cane, a Sudanese-American multi-instrumentalist, multi-genre, incredible musician. It's a great listen for either when you're out running errands at the grocery store or you're hanging out at home. So please, again, be safe, support the local community. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm with Min Phan of Porridge and Puffs, and we are in Hi-Fi, historic Filipino town.
Yeah.
Which is great. I actually never heard it referred to as Hi-Fi until I heard you refer to it as Hi-Fi, and I love it.
Hi-Fi.
Yeah. We are sitting in a very beautiful space, a very neighborhood space, and we have felt for a long time that for restaurants to really succeed and have longevity, that they need to become neighborhood restaurants. Is that how you would describe Porridge and Puffs?
I think that's our intention. I think it takes, the road takes a few tangents, and I think the first, we're in our first year, you know, we're a little past the first year, and I think the first year, it's a mix between a neighborhood joint, not immediate neighborhood, some immediate neighbors, but the neighbors meaning Echo Park, Silver Lake, Los Feliz.
East side,
yeah. Do you know we share the same zip code, 90026, as Echo Park and Silver Lake? We just prefer not to call it that. We wanted to stand out a little bit. But that's our clientele. You know, our clientele is within this area, Westlake,
sure.
K-Town. East Side. I mean, East Side's very broad. And then we also get a good amount of destination diners on the weekends and at night.
Yes.
And that's because of press, thankfully, and people who've known us and live from far away. So it's a mix.
That press, though, especially with the way there's so much turnover now, it comes for the first year, a couple of years, but then you really got to settle in and really become a place that people who live in the expanded neighborhood, they go, I'm craving this, we're coming here, this is part of our eating routine.
Totally, and I think we struggle with that a little bit. I think people always say year one's really hard. Knock on wood, for us, year one wasn't as hard.
You can knock on the table for that one. There we go.
Yeah, and it's literally wood.
Yeah.
Year one was, I planned year one out, and I had very high expectations of myself personally, but very low expectations working in the restaurant industry.
Sure.
Knowing what is realistic, I had very low expectations of what, you know, what financially we needed to deliver and what milestones we needed to meet. Those were very low, and I kind of set up the restaurant so we can meet those expectations, and we did. So year one was easy. Going into year two now, I know it's much harder because you have to, how do you stay relevant? You can't be like, I'm like, I'm going to invent this every week.
And you do. And you have that fresh new bowl. You have that fresh new dish. And that keeps people coming back
in. And a fresh new service all the time. So we really, I mean, at my core, I like creating things and making things new. You know, I like innovating things. So that's at my core. But it's not a great way to run a food business. People love consistency.
100%.
They love the same thing. They'll say they want innovation, but you look at what people buy and what it's 99% of the time, it's the same three things. So, I mean, it kind of bums me out because we'll like test things and put it on the menu and then people don't really. So it takes a while. But yeah, the being a neighborhood place is really important to me.
I mean, I love that. And you being in the restaurant business for so long, you've sort of seen the ups and downs of it. I mean, you had Field Trip, which closed.
Yeah.
And what was your mindset then, I guess? Let's go back a little bit, because I want to work our way back now and work our way to the restaurant. Like, so you're at Field Trip, you had a restaurant that was doing a little bit, if not more consistent, but like it was a more traditional type of restaurant. When you think of like someone has a restaurant, they're a chef, I have an idea of what I'm going into.
Yeah.
And that closed. So did that, having gone through that and going through the experience of doing something by a certain set of rules, then allow you to free you up to be like, what's next? How do I want to approach the next project?
I think I've always been out of the box, even when the reason Field Trip was in the parameters it was, it was a partnership with the Hollywood Farmers Market and CLA, and I had to run the menu and the concept by them. And when I brought up Porridge and Puffs to the board, they just kind of like, it was a different language. And I was going like, you know, more forged goods and stuff that from because we were, you know, we had to buy everything from the farmer's market. So I'm like, I was telling the farmers to bring me things that they were getting that no one was buying.
Sure.
And you know, and that was the concept. It's like, this is this porridge thing, and I'm using, you know, rice from Coda Farms, which is at the market, and I'm going to test out grains from Tehachapi and all these grains that can become porridge. And that was the original concept. And no one, not one of them, bought on into it. It was really hard. So they're like, why can't you just do a farm-to-table place? I'm like, I've been doing farm-to-table places my whole fucking career.
You're
yes,
like, I can. Yeah. So yes, can the next person.
So I did. Yeah. So I did. But then I snuck in a lot of things. And, you know, like I worked at Beechwood.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's up in the hills and it's like very farm-to-table. And then I snuck in, you know, I snuck in porch there like, you know, 15 years ago.
So when Field Trip closed and... you, I mean, it seems like didn't get to execute the full vision you want because other people didn't get it. How did that leave you feeling?
You know, the funny thing is I didn't think Porridge and Pus was, it wasn't supposed to be a long-term project.
Got it.
It was supposed to be a very, it was supposed to be an exploration of grains and how they play into a liquid and a solid. Liquid, you know, meaning porridge, and puffs is also a grain, you know, rice grain. And I was like, and I was going to play with all the grains. I'm like, every single culture does things with grains, but I really wanted to bring grains back and look at grains and see what they do, you know, in different forms. So that was the project. And it was at Field Trip, and I didn't really, I kind of called it Porridge and Puffs because, you know, when you name a file, when you first name a file, you don't give it an abstract cool name. You name it exactly what it is.
People should know by now that when you name something, that there is a good chance that name is going to stick.
Which is really scary, right? Because it's like the, it's the name I gave a file on my computer because it's supposed to be so straightforward, right? And so,
I don't want to search for this. I don't want to think like Lucid Dream 36.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So I just wrote it down. I'm very, you know, and I'm the least literal person, you know, you can find. Because you tell me something and I'll think of it very abstractly. I'm like, bleh, bleh, bleh. And I'm like, I hate being really literal because I'm like, where's the gray area? Where's the nuance? And that's, so being very literal is not my thing. I do like alliteration with porn shows. But when Jonathan Gold comes in and he's like, what's this, Porridge and Puffs? And I, you know, and then he writes about it, and then people come in, and you're like, oh shit, this name.
Oh, he put that, he made that real.
Yeah, and it became very tangible. And then, you know, and I'm not a dummy, so I'm like, shit, you know what? I think there's legs on this, and people want this. And I think I've always liked porridge, and I wanted some component of it, because I just think it's a very, for me, it started off as not only as culinary and scientific and learning about these grains and using ancient grains and using farmers, but it's also a great way to look into the future and how do we use waste, you know, like, and how do we look at grains into the future? And that was to me, and how do we look at traditional things and bring it into the future? So that was always really important to me, but I do that with everything, not just grains and porridge, but the name Porridge and Puffs stuck.
It's easy to hang your hat on. Like, you have an idea of at least what you're going into because it's so much, it's really a canvas for your work.
I'm glad you're saying that because I think it's, I think a lot of times I'm like, God, this name is really holding me back. And I always look at the name like Porridge and Puffs, but the and is the plus sign, and that's important to me. The plus is the most important thing in the name.
That plus is the drop down menu.
Yes.
And there's a million things under there. But, you know, so many people have those base staples in a culture, rice, noodles. It's usually a carbohydrate or a grain of some type. And that is just the bulk of it. And then what you do with it, what you put on top of it, is where the artistic flourish, the free association comes. Right. And especially being in a place like L.A., you have so much opportunity to explore what goes on top.
Right, or what goes inside it.
What goes inside it.
Like, how do you cook it? How do you study grains? How do you make it? How do you blossom it? How do you bloom it? How do you... It reacts different on a different day. And for me, that I nerd out on that stuff. You know, I smell it, and I'm like, something's off. You know, it could be the same rice, but, you know, maybe we stored it differently. We stored it in a different place. Did we wrap this? Did we... You know, I'm constantly... And that's, like, for me, really fun. And that's something that I think is... I hope is inspiring my staff. I'm like, this is the... I think that kind of... care and thoughtfulness is not being passed on as much. Because I think that's what I'm trying to create with my team. It's like, hey, you know, let's put the thoughtfulness back. Let's ask why every time. You know, rather than just doing, I think a lot of times the kitchens just do it because I'm the chef and you say that. And that's what I grew up with a lot. And I'm like, this is so dumb. Like, why? And you know, I want people to be able to have common sense, to have a sense of where things come from and
why. Sense of purpose.
Yeah.
So in between Field Trip and the Brick and Mortar, you did a lot of consulting. You did a lot of pop-ups. You saw more of the world, both physically being out of a restaurant, mm-hmm. but then also the literal world itself. Yeah. What lessons and what learnings did you take going into the new project? Was there anything that you saw during those couple of years that you still use the reference point today?
I think I come from fine dining, started there early on, which I think a lot of chefs do when they change careers, especially if they're educated and they, you know, they did something else and they come back and they're like, shit, you know what? I don't have the time in my favor. I'm not 16. I can't lug a lot of shit and work really fast and prove myself in
sure.
that way. So you better be really smart. If it's mm-hmm. your second career, you better learn really fast, work three times as hard. And I'm a woman. So there's all these things that make you work harder and faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being out of it, I think confidence was always an issue. That's why I went to culinary school, because I'm like, confidence was always, I really want some competency, and I want to know the language, I want to be able to communicate it. So I think that helped build confidence. I don't think it's necessary. I think the confidence is in there, but
how you get that confidence is everyone's own personal journey.
Totally.
Because you see some people who are confident, and I go, I don't know how you got that based on the work you've done,
yeah.
but you got it in spades.
Yeah. And then for me, it's like, it's knowing information and mm-hmm. then forgetting all of it.
Hmm.
I'm a big believer in breaking the rules.
Great.
However, you better fucking know the rules so you don't reinvent the wheel. And I think that's like my problem with people a lot. I'm like, you think you're out of the box, but you're actually inside the fucking box because you don't know where the box is.
Oh, that's worse to be like, you're in the box. You don't even know you're in
yeah.
the box.
Yeah. And so for me, it's really important to know, to be as educated as possible, and then to kind of have it way in the back of my mind as a foundation. And then kind of forget about it and be like, yeah, but okay, I get it now. And I like to see things anthropologically, and you know, it's just like I like to see it from different views. But I don't think you can without having some experience. So I think that time, it's age, it's experience, it's returning to a place that I thought I needed to know and understand, like fine dining. And then I just realized I fucking hate, I love fine dining in the sense that, yeah, you know, it's kind
yes.
of fun, but I kind of hate it ethically because there's so much waste.
Yeah.
There's the diners, there's a class difference, there's a different sense of purpose, and in general, no matter where you are, places that claim sustainability and it's gotten a war, they're fucking wasteful.
Yeah.
I know they're waste. I've been in those places. I'm not going to call them out, and they're like, green award, blah, 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 and I'm like, you're blowing your nose with the fucking napkin that you throw out one time.
Right.
That's like fucked up. Like,
right.
you know, and that napkin is a fucking Danish napkin that costs you $4.
That you had to fly over.
Yeah. yeah.
And the jet fuel and everything.
And like, you guys, come on. You know, like it's just so, I think it helped me really get comfortable with what I do. And I said, you know what? Let's take all the good things. Let's take the innovation. Let's take, you know, let's take staff education.
Sure.
Let's take these things that are really awesome. Take out the toxic masculinity that I think is really bad in the kitchen culture.
Of course.
Take out the sense camaraderie should look different to me. Because, you know, it's like, I think I've always been, I was older. I don't think it's because I'm female, because I've always been a tomboy and I've always been one of the guys.
Yeah.
But I've always been a little bit older than most of the kitchen staff. And I'm like, God, you guys are immature. Like, this is such a waste of your time and a waste of my energy. So I wanted to change that. You know what I mean? And I'm like, how do you have camaraderie without having a pissing contest? You know?
It's tough.
Yeah. So,
it's tough when you're trying to prove yourself as well. When it's competition. When
yeah,
you see it as
yeah.
a competition and you're all actually working towards the same goal.
Yeah, true.
But it's very tough to pull back and be like, we're all in this together. This is not about my individual career.
Yeah. And because you, you know, I think it's, And I think that inner confidence is so important. And
that's also where it comes from as well. You're in there, maybe you don't feel as confident, so you think you got to either sabotage or shit talk
yes.
or bully someone to make it seem like you feel more
but that's
comfortable.
That's a very masculine thing.
Sure.
You know, I think women approach it very different. And cultural.
Cultural as well.
And, you know, and I think it's very different. And so I, you know, I did a lot of observation. I went to where I thought would be the best practices in work in work-life balance because you hear about it. Scandinavia.
It's amazing.
But no, they have the same fucked up, you know what? They work 12, 16 hours a day too.
But don't they have a better work-life balance when you have a kid and when you have different life happenings? Or does that not apply to restaurants?
Doesn't apply to restaurants.
Huh.
And what people don't realize.
I did not realize.
And then the only way you can do it is if you're fucking Rene Redzepi and you take 3 months off to take your kids around the world. And he says he wants that for the rest of the world. I'm like, he'll probably do it, which is great. But it's a different fucking system.
It's a different system.
Where restaurants and small businesses are treated as culture.
Yeah.
They're given grants. They're not asked to make money because they're being given money to make this survive. And they survive on free labor from trust fund kids. Put all that together, you can't run an immigrant business in LA.
Mm-mm.
And that model would never, no matter who I want to be, would never work for me.
Awesome. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break because I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how you funded the restaurant and the different types of restaurants that are opening in LA right now. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Spilling words on your thoughts, leaving stains on your mental.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are at Porridge and Puffs, emphasis on the and, right?
Yes.
We were with Min, and we are sitting here in L.A. If you've been following restaurant openings in L.A. over the last couple of years, I really feel there's only two sort of restaurants that are really opening. One is the smaller, sort of artistic, DIY-driven restaurant. And then the other end are these grandiose projects. And I feel that there's very little room in between right now for a different type of restaurant. Why do you think that's happening? And do you think that there can be a cohesive LA dining scene with such extremes when it comes to restaurant opening?
I don't know. I really don't know what the formula is. I just know that if you want to open a restaurant like the way I did, you better work really fucking hard. Like, you're working like sometimes like 22 hours a day the first year.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours of sleep. You put the short ribs in. You go home. You shower. You come back. You're back on the line. It's like, literally. And, you know, and it's just, I don't know if people really want to do that. And if I want people to do that, because that's not really healthy. But I don't know if there's any other way to do it. And if you're a small place, I have to wear a lot of hats because everything is so expensive. Mm-hmm. I am my own lot. Our team, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this one day, but our team is literally four people in the back.
Wow.
All shifts. And, you know, we're trying to figure, because, and that's one thing that I did learn from fine dining and, you know, being Copenhagen, is they have one team that works 12 hours, that works from the beginning, preps, do their own stuff, and works all the way through. And I think it makes for really great talent, mm-hmm. and it really consistent, and we've taken that. But the labor market doesn't really let you do that because there's not enough people who want to do that.
No, because people do that for 6 months, and they're like, I want to go over to my own spot.
Totally. And it's a very high level of talent,
mm-hmm.
and you are dealing with people who, yes, who probably have the potential to open their own place, but with whatever situation, they're not quite, you know, they're not doing that. But that's where I'm looking at the model very different. For me, it's a bigger picture than just this place, in the sense of the model. I think in the next year, I really want to look at the model, and it's not perfect. It's very hard. It's a lot of centered. I have to work a lot. I have to make ends meet. I'm paying one tax and then deferring another and then repaying that. And you know, it's a lot of numbers changing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. And you're always on the precipices of, you know, shit, did I pay this right? You're wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah.
So I don't recommend it for someone. I don't know how people do it. You either do it because you don't have enough experience and you fuck up and it doesn't matter because you're young enough to redo it.
Right.
Or you have to have a lot of experience like me where I'm like, you know what? Here are my thresholds. I know what I can invest.
Yeah.
I know with my partner, who also has a very demanding job and a daughter who, you know, like I know where my family life stands. And so I'm really lucky. Like, I know where everything stands. I'm like, okay, this is happening. We're going to this as a family. These are the sacrifices we have to make. And for me, the payoff, hopefully, is figuring out this model to do it for others. And to, you know, to have a collective, to kind of look at things differently than the way it's been done. Because our food system's broken. And I deal with a broken food system, restaurant system, all day, every day. And it breaks my heart.
I mean, you had money. You could have had investors. You could have had people.
Nah, I could have, but it sucks.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it wasn't like, you know, from the time with Field Trip, from your pop-ups,
yeah.
from, you know, who you were in the LA food scene, you could have put together someone else's money.
Oh, so many offers came.
But why didn't you?
Because they suck.
But why did they suck?
Okay, what people don't realize is these deals, I'm going to just say it right now.
Say it.
These deals are meant for investors, and they're meant for chefs to fail. These deals a lot of times, I mean, you know, there's exceptions.
What is it? People shorting the market?
I think there's exceptions. I think some places that I know from afar that seems really good is because they're people I love. I think Rustic Canyon Family
mm-hmm.
is a good example. I think you know, Joseph Centeno has its own thing, but he's still head of that.
Yep.
Right? And I think Rustic Canyon Family does a really good job. They're kind of, I think, when I look, I'm like that, they're kind of a, you know, like a tent pole of
what. So you mean of people who are investing in other people's restaurants and saying, we're going to set you up for success.
Yes.
But they're, that's ingrown restaurant people. Are you talking about investors who are coming to you that were just, you could have been a shoe shop, you could have been a magazine, you could have been dental supplies. Like, they were just looking to invest their money somewhere.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I just don't think like that. I think ethically it feels really wrong. Yeah, there's a few ways you can do it, right? You can get restaurant people who know, I mean, you know, like, there's a lot of restaurant groups. And you talk to them and they're like, wait, you're taking a percentage right off the bat? I've done these numbers. I know these numbers. And you're going to nickel and dime my labor. My labor's super high. Like, super high. Like, I think people don't talk about this. But the labor, percentage of labor, it's like, the first year, it's like 110%. It's like, I don't even make enough money to cover my staff. It's like very, very hard. Thank God, you know, I have money saved away, or I do catering gigs.
Sure.
I side hustle myself to pay my employees, if that makes sense. Like, I will I'll go and do a, you know, catering gig, you know, on my day off, just so I can, you know.
Right, and that money gets folded back into the restaurant.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's...
And that's...
That's important. But also, and also... The other thing that people don't talk about is, well, you talked about a little bit at the beginning about outsider people who aren't in the restaurant and their influence on it. And that's everything from the food you're making and then also the design of the space. Like the space that you made, you came in, it was a fresh coat of paint, you put up a gorgeous, you know, dried herbs and flowers, things like that. But you hear these like crazy $5 million, $6 million, $7 build-out stories and you go, how do you make your money back off of that?
You don't, because I ran the numbers, but I run numbers a lot, which is like really funny because people don't think I'm a numbers person. I'm just really practical and ethical.
Yeah, but you have to be when you open a restaurant. Yeah, you have to be when you open any business. Yeah, you have to be a numbers person.
Yeah, it's because it's a fucking business.
It's a business.
I wish I was an artist and the government of Denmark or Trump was like, you know, giving me money, be like, you're an artist, cool. Here's some money, you know, give culture. I wish.
Wouldn't it be a great thing? It's like, I'm an artist. I just have, my art project is a restaurant.
Yeah. I want.
Ooh,
I mean,
little Pell Grant, grant for the restaurant.
I'll tell you what. I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to vote for because I don't know yet.
Okay.
But universal fucking healthcare.
Yeah.
It's going to fucking change it for me because it is going to take so much stress off of me.
Yeah.
Of how much I worry about my team and if something happens, and if the workers' comp could go down because universal healthcare is included in that, it's a fucking game changer. Like, I'm like, that's going to help small businesses so fucking much.
Yeah.
I mean, I can talk about politics all day, but people don't fucking care about small businesses. And they're kind of the livelihood to make this culture really bright and abundant because...
They definitely do talk about middle class small business as the lifeblood, unique selling point of America, like what makes America great. And, you know, that's essentially the American capitalistic dream where it's, you can start a restaurant like this, you can change the system, and then you can become rich.
But what about the cultural contribution? LA would not be the city it is if not for the cultural contribution, food scene,
sure,
of all the people that have restaurants and where they, and immigrants.
I mean, you drive down Beverly.
Yeah.
You drive down Beverly and it's like you're going through the world of just the different small, nondescript.
Even just Latin American.
Just fine. Forget the world. Latam.
Yeah.
You just go down and it's like Guatemalan, Salvadorian, Chilean. Yeah. You just go and you're like, these people aren't out there hustling for press. They're not in the cycle. They're just out there just making food.
Yeah.
And making a business and supporting their family and their community.
And contributing these things that you otherwise wouldn't be able to eat.
Building neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So...
And that's important to me.
That is important. And, you know, you coming into Hi-Fi as this restaurant, like, how have you worked to, going back to the beginning, make yourself a neighborhood business? Like, how have you worked to integrate yourself in? Because I know that you talked about in the past, like, you looked at other neighborhoods, but you didn't feel that those were the right neighborhoods for you. Like, why did you land here? How have you integrated yourself? And as you've talked about thinking about the future, what more do you see giving yourself back to the community?
I think we've changed the way, we keep changing. It's an evolution of the way we look at our space. I really wanted to come in, and I think it was really shallow of me. You know, it's like such a sophomoric move. I'm like, I want this to be a space for everyone.
Sure.
Which is like so idealistic and so wonderful. But the immediate neighborhood kind of didn't like us.
Really?
And that really bummed me out because I was like, I want to be a restaurant for everyone. Sorry, I didn't mean to bang that.
No, it's passion. You can bang on the passion points.
I wanted it to be a restaurant for everyone. I wanted the general shop across the street, the Botanica, the discount mall. I wanted those people to come and eat here. I was so mistaken. They'd come in here and they'd be like, I want the combo plate with fried rice. And I just like, and I love Chinese food. And I'm like, and I just felt this sense of racism, you know, against me. And then I'm like looking to find myself, you know, I find myself rethinking everything. And I'm like, I do want those people. But at the end of the day, I can't convince people right away of what we're doing.
Sure.
And sometimes that's hard, you know, because you want to win everyone's hearts. But what I realize is, you know what, we do have, the people who come here have to know a little bit about something about us. Like what we do. Mm. They come in and they can come off the street, but they have to have a certain, you know, if you're expecting a combo plate with rice and chow mein and say, I love Chinese food, you're going to be so sad. And I think that made me sad. I'm like, oh, maybe not. And they're like, wait, what are you? And I'm like, I'm Vietnamese. They're like, oh, well, you should make pho. And I'm like, no, that's my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'm like, and they're like, but this is Vietnamese food. I'm like, no, it's not Vietnamese food because my mom gets really bummed out when I tell people it's Vietnamese food. I can say I'm Vietnamese and I live in LA and this is an influence of, mostly it's an influence of the ingredients available to me. And the zeitgeist in, you know, the ether, because we all get so inspired by everything. We travel the world and we eat here. And that's what this place is. And it only can exist in its current form in LA. And mm-hmm. I'm really proud of that. But there's still such an education to the neighborhood that's changing. But the thing is, this neighborhood's always been like this. K-Town's right there. Silver Lake's right there. Echo Park's right there. So it's not like I'm coming in and being like, I'm going to make this neighborhood better. This neighborhood's fucking awesome.
It's awesome.
And I think people, like, they're like, well, you're gentrifying. And I'm like, dude, this area's been here forever. Vietnamese people have been here forever. These are small businesses that are starting to look a little different with a coat of paint. You know, so I think those are things I struggle with, because it's still, even though you know in your heart of heart you're doing the right thing, you still have to look at those other perspectives to see if, you know, to get a gauge on it. So I think what I've made peace with is it's going to be what it's going to be, and I have to wake up every day and say, am I being ethical? Am I doing the right thing? Yes, I'm changing the neighborhood. You know what? That's okay.
That's okay.
And I think it's really, is it okay? And who are you hurting? And what are you hurting? Are you pricing people out? And I'm like, wait, I've lived in this neighborhood for a long time. Alyssa Walker lives in the neighborhood. Like, these are people who eat here, live in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a very diverse neighborhood. And what people don't realize is Echo Park here, it's a very diverse neighborhood. There's different ethnicities, there's different education levels, there's different income levels. And that's really exciting and interesting to me. But people like to really just generalize, and you can't.
You can't. You can only go and talk about what you do through your actions and how you present yourself. And there's no clean answer. I mean, there's no easy answer.
No, and you can't do a purity test. I think that's like the state I'm in general, is I'm an immigrant, right? Like, I can't, if you do a purity test on everything, you're gonna be so, and I'm old, and you're gonna be so sad, you know, compared to the rest
you're
of
not
like the
old.
I'm not old, but compared to the rest of the restaurant world, when you're like 16-year-old and, you know, apprenticing, I'm like, you know, you're like, yeah, you know, yeah. What? I'm gonna vote for someone who like passed this purity test in every single mark, and I'm like, I want to make sure it's this nuance, comma, please, like it's just like I think the gray area and the nuance is really important. And
that's where the magic sort of happens.
It's the best place.
Right? Like, where you're trying something new. It's not perfect. Not everyone's happy, but it's a little dangerous, but it's also a little
And I
safe.
Love that space.
But that space is, like, where the art comes from. Because if you came in here and you said, I know what the neighborhood needs.
I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If that's your approach, then, of course, when people come in, like, fuck you, you don't know what we need. But you're going, look, this is what I can afford. I'm funding this out of pocket. I don't have investors. I'm making a food that I believe in.
I live 7 minutes door to door. I grew up here. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know this place.
It's like, where do you want me to go? This is my neighborhood,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's tough. But you know, look, when you open the doors to the public, you open the doors to the public.
Yeah.
And you can't pick who gets to walk through with their impressions and their attitudes and things like that.
No, and you have to just be open all the time.
All
and that's
the time.
Something that we train our staff.
So one other part of the community that I love that has found a place here is the solo diner, which in some cases has a stigma against, but there really is a beauty of going out, bringing a book, or just coming out and eating a meal by yourself.
There shouldn't be a stigma, right? Because it's like, I think I love going to the movies alone.
Sure.
I love you. I just like being alone a lot.
I think
you should be comfortable in your... And I think the age of having to be coupled or having to be with people, I don't get that.
Sometimes you are just surrounded by other influences of people, social media or work or things like that. That you go like, I just want to have a meal by myself.
Yeah, I love having a meal. And I think it's part of what I love inner confidence and just being comfortable in your skin. It's something I work a lot with my team. So we have to, but being able to be comfortable in your skin takes outer forces to remind you to be comfortable in your skin by yourself.
It's that confidence.
And that's really important with our team. We train them meticulously to make people feel really comfortable about themselves. Because that's what I love. And I think, you know, like, yeah, I go to places and it's not that I don't love music, because I love music, but does it have to take over my life when I go into a place?
You mean like a restaurant
like
or a store?
Like a restaurant or a store. And sometimes it's so offensively loud.
Or also not programmed well to the point where it's like, this is obviously just an afterthought, and it's actually disrupting the experience. It can be quiet. Perhaps some light jazz.
Yeah.
Throw some Miles Davis on.
That's what we do. You obviously know us very well. Yeah. We pretty much oscillate between some sort of a night, because I'm stuck, some sort of like early 90s, post new wave.
Love it.
Indie pop. You know, anything from Belle and Sebastian and the Shins to Miles Davis. And that's kind of like, that's how we also, and then Edith Piaf at night, because I love Edith. And that's about, you know, so that's kind of what we play. But
I'll take breeze from that oscillation, you know?
Yeah, and I like it. It's just, I think it gives you room to think and contemplate. Our food, I think, I make the food for you to be contemplative. You don't have to be. You can be nourished in any way, shape, or form. Nourishment's important to me. But you can either be nourished cerebrally, you can be nourished just, you know, your stomach's full, you're having a great day and you feel good, you know, your gut's good, or you can be nourished because you've been really well taken care of. And that's important to me. And I think you should be able to have that experience alone at a table. And I think that's part of daily life. I love the solo diner. Kudos to people who come in. And I love the solo diner who comes and treats themselves sometimes.
Mm.
And they order three courses. And then I send them another course because I'm like, I love you.
I love you. I see you.
Yeah, I see you.
I recognize what you're doing.
Yeah, you're like awesome.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If people want to come visit you or check you out online or find anything, where can they go?
PorageandPuffs.com. And Instagram, Porge.
Is it spelled out and?
Okay. And then on Instagram, it's Porge and Puffs as well. It's Porge and Puffs spelled out and everywhere.
Everywhere.
Instagram's the best. That's the place that you're laugh because we don't update that much either. I think we don't update a lot as much as we do, but you'll get the gist. Yeah,
come in.
Every day is different here.
Every day is different. Well, thank you so much. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Ooh.
I wanna build a house with you, a house with you, a house with you, a home, so we can be alone. And I've been running, I've been hiding, I've been falling down and climbing back up where they think they belong. Oh, let's go. And I know that you wouldn't try to tell me what you don't. Oh. I wanna build a house with you, a house with you, a house with you. I wanna build a house with you, so we can be alone. So we can be alone. And alone, alone. And I've been slipping on my shoes, my tongue is swole, my lips are bruised, and I can't get up the hill. And I've been jumping through some leaves and chopping down some cherry trees, so I, oh, so I can tell, so I can tell the truth. To ears and eyes with a killer at your throat. I wanna build a house with you, a house with you, a house with you. I wanna build a house with you, so we can be alone. So we can be alone.
This episode is brought to you by New York Mutual Trading, the premier Japanese food, alcoholic beverage, and restaurant supply specialist. Mutual Trading is the Japanese food authority, true to the heart in upholding genuine Japanese food traditions, and progressive in exploring new ways to provide innovative restaurant supplies and services. They import, export, distribute, and manufacture the top brands for retailer and food service customers nationwide. Learn more at nymtc.com.
All right,
here we go. I mean, every time I think that we've had a band that is squeezed in here,
someone comes in and steps along.
And they fit in.
I mean, let's just go through the gear in the room. We got an amp. We got a ton of amps outside.
Three amps.
Congas.
Four toms.
Two floor toms. Drum pad. Vibe.
Own mixer.
Some other vibe. A bass.
A sound guy. Sound guy. I kind of like that you described your drum machine as vibes. With his vibes right there. Litany of pedals.
Vibes. Yeah, we got a lot of pedals in here.
I don't see them.
They're there. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Our first fall guest. Although it's still kind of summerish outside. Who are you guys?
The name of the band is Sin Cane. Brooklyn band. I'm here with Mikey, Freedom Heart, Ish, the Man of Steel, Aaron, and J Tram.
So why don't you give our listeners a little background on where you guys come from, how you came together?
I started the band a while ago.
Oh, introduce yourself too.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm Ahmed Gallup, and I write the music for the group. And I started the band almost 7 years ago. I was living in Ohio. I'm originally from Sudan. And I put out two records and kind of got picked up by a bunch of different bands to tour. So I kind of put the group in the back burner. But then I moved to New York, and I decided I wanted to move on forward with this project. So I revamped it. I met J Tram when we were playing in Yesair together. And through, you know, living in New York, I met Mikey Freedom Heart here, and he brought along the rest of the crew, Ish and Aaron Steele.
So when you pick up a group after, you know, you have two records and you go on tour with a bunch of them and come back, you know, what did you learn and bring into this time around that was different from the first time out?
Oh man, well, I had like the blessing of touring the world and really kind of see a bunch of people do the right thing and a bunch of people do the wrong thing. So I mean, it really puts a lot into perspective. I know what I'm getting myself into now. When before I was like 23-year-old kid, didn't know anything. I was just kind of making music all willy-nilly, and now it's given me a lot of focus, you know.
No names, but examples of one person doing the right thing and one person doing the wrong thing. You can choose which is first.
Yeah, choose whatever you want.
Yeah. Well,
but no names. We don't call people out.
Mr. X and...
Well, yeah. I mean, I've worked with a lot of really, like, super, super organized people who just are very honest and straight up. I mean, that's one big thing I've learned, is to be straight up and honest. And if you're not straight up and honest, then it creates a lot of anxiety and tension. And that's just, I mean, I guess that's all I can really say. I mean, the right thing is to be honest. The wrong thing is to drink too much.
He's talking to me.
Get it together, Mikey Freedom Heart.
God bless.
But so now that you're back in Britain, so how long has this incarnation been together?
Not even a year. I mean, Mikey and I and J Tram, we started playing together in what, like December or
it was
January?
After the only snow that happened last year, so it was either
in January.
No, it was the last weekend in October.
Yeah,
the 28th.
Yeah, it started a little like slow. I was touring with Eleanor Friedberger at the time, and so I didn't really have as much time as I do now. And then we had a few bass players that we played with, but Ish came through in May, and we've been playing with him. And then just for this, because we want to do something special, we brought Aaron along. But
yeah, why don't we get a tune? You guys need like what, 10 seconds of noise, and then start it. Yeah. How do you guys feel?
I think we're gonna see. All right.
Jack, how do we sound out there? Can I get a thumbs up? Okay. All right, so let's get just for the room, and then we can start.
All right.
That was a test. 3, 4.
You guys are going to do us a big disservice because now everyone's going to want to bring all this gear in because it sounds so good.
It's like,
go big or go home.
It's one guy on acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of effects.
That vibes palette is really putting out a lot of vibes.
We haven't even used it yet.
Oh, really? Oh.
Vibes palette comes on the next one.
Oh, okay. that is amazing.
That's a really amazing sound.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of live mixing here. It sounds awesome, guys. So now the band's together. New record, right?
Yeah, the record's coming out next month, October 23rd on DFA.
Oh, okay, so how did that come about? Or what was the recording process, since you guys have only been together for less than a year?
Well, I played drums on it, but these and other people came and did random things.
I recorded it pretty much by myself. I did maybe 85% of the record myself, and then in the process of recording, because I played so much with J-Tram, I just had him come in and redo pretty much all the drums. And Ira from Yesera came and he recorded a little bit on he redid some bass. And my friend George, Twin Shadow, he ripped a pretty gnarly guitar solo on the record. And
special guest Shred.
So, yeah.
It's funny you say that because I was listening to the opening track we played, mm-hmm. and I was like, there's such a Yesera vibe to this. But in your own way, but the opening is just very strong, Jay Sayer-esque type of thing in all the best ways possible.
I just tried. I just kind of figured that's what was going to happen. So I just, I was like,
which track is it?
Jeeper Creeper. Decided Ira plays on that song.
Yeah. Actually. Which is the best way that you can have a Jay Sayer sounding song is by having the dude from Jay Sayer play. That kind of squashes all type of,
I just kind of, call a spade, I guess.
No, it's good. And so then how did the DFA thing come around? Shout out to John.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I think John might be listening.
And shout out to Chris.
John and Chris. Hey, guys.
What up, guys?
They were. John was formed. I geeked out on, grew up listening to DFA records, geeked out on John when he came on the show.
Oh, nice. Yeah. He's a lord. He's a true lord. what happened was I released Jeeper Creeper and Runnin' on my own, and just kind of the whole Runnin' thing. It did a lot better than I expected, and just randomly in April I got an email from him and he was really interested in the track and he said he wanted to hear some more music, so I sent him the record and he really liked it, and it just kind of, one thing led to another. It's pretty cool.
I mean, is it really just that easy?
No, it's really not that easy. But
one of the things we like to show on kids like it, that it is, I mean, you can play it off of like that easy, but it wasn't that easy.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the record's been done for almost 2 years, right? You know? And I've gone through like many, many different ups and downs with it, and it is finally now just starting to like see the light of day. You know, I'm just I've heard the music so much, and playing it live has really kind of given it new light, but it's been done for a long time.
I mean, what, you know, for musicians who've been at it but maybe been toiling in a little bit of the unknown, and now having being able to come out on DFA, it's like, can you like share one of like your lowest of lows and like to the point that you actually got through it and got to the other side?
Oh, man.
How long do we have?
We got a couple minutes for that answer.
The lowest of lows, man. Well, I recorded, man, I when we stopped playing with Yesair, it was kind of J-Tram and I, we had like a year off before we started everything, and I didn't really have anything in the pipeline at all, and the record was finished, and it seemed like there was some interest, but nothing really happened at all. And I had like a few rehearsals with a bunch of people that didn't really work out, and I didn't really know at all what I was doing. I didn't know like if anything was gonna happen. Ryan here, my roommate, like has always been like pretty encouraging and excited about everything I've been doing, but I don't know, man. Like when you're around to a lot of like really creative and talented people that are succeeding so well, and your project doesn't seem to be succeeding on that level, you sensationalize all your feelings, and you think like I had, like, you know, 80 cents in my bank account and living in New York, and you know, was in a really crappy relationship with somebody, and you know.
So you're saying roommates
all changed.
Yeah. Roommates, bandmates got you through it.
Yeah. These are like this is like my family, you know. Everyone here has really been super encouraging and exciting.
I feel like it's important to share those stories alongside the I got the record deal that's coming out next month, just to kind of give a little hope to all the people who are writing good music and toiling alone, that like everyone feels those lows. Like there's not a single person that has not felt that epic soul crushing low.
I once lost the Yesair band computer on tour and thought I was going to get fired. And
it was after you set J-Tram's pants on fire.
Yeah.
How did you lose it?
I set J-Tram's pants on fire. I lost the band computer, and I was...
There's a longer story to that, which we don't have
to... Yeah, we don't
was,
have to...
Was that part of the drink too much advice?
That wasn't drink too much. That was... another...
Why don't...
We'll leave it at that. All right, let's
do drugs.
Yeah, don't do drugs. Let's rip another song. How about that?
Okay.
What are we going to hear?
We're going to hear Runnin', the song you played a little bit earlier.
Great.
Featuring Bucks.
I don't mean to let you down. I gotta keep on running. Until my body's all but broken down. Gotta keep on running, running.
So many vibes. Can we get one of those applause sounds, please, from the room? Just
that one?
I couldn't hear the vibes. That was the problem.
Yeah, the vibes can be felt all around. That was amazing. Some New Year's vibes. So you have some upcoming shows, right? You just got done with the residency at Zebulon.
Yeah.
How is I love that place. And actually, your vibes fit quite well in Zebulon.
It was a vibe. That's definitely what it was.
They sell the best.
Each time we say that word.
Like, oh, yeah. Say? There's
shout
one
out,
more
shout
Z.
Shout out to Caveman.
I enjoy their potato chips they serve at Zebulon's. They've certainly good bagged potato chips. Really?
Yeah, their potato chips are great.
Right?
Yeah.
Every week.
The mozzarella sand.
Yeah.
Like,
they actually have surprisingly, secretly good bar food.
Well, yeah, they do.
Really? Yeah. It's a bunch of French guys, right, that own it?
Yeah. Yeah. They're the French bohemian.
French.
Yeah,
it's definitely.
When you say French bohemian, I just think like a carafe of wine in hand at all times.
Yeah, no,
I think Zebulon sort of is definitely a place of older Brooklyn.
Yep.
Like it's
yep.
It's a movie thing, jazz, DJ, cafe.
Yeah, older Brooklyn. Yeah.
Older Brooklyn, I mean, like 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. We live
not older like shootout druggy Brooklyn.
No.
Yeah. We live right down the street from there, and it's always a scene.
Don't blow up our spot.
I mean, our spot's getting blown up by a wrecking ball in 3 months anyway. Yeah. So
that's the new Brooklyn.
So where are you? Where you coming? You're playing a couple shows in September, right?
Yeah, we're playing Music Hall of Williamsburg on Sunday the 23rd with Lee Scratch Perry, which we're all really
excited. No big deal.
No big deal.
Yeah,
we're playing at Death by Audio on the 27th with Sana Ra, and we're playing the DeKalb Market. They're having a big blowout party at the end of the month on the 30th.
So who's playing the DeKalb Market Party?
Man, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good place.
Yeah.
That place is... It's like this place.
It's also shipping containers.
It's all shipping. Yeah. Have you been out there?
Yeah, we go... I mean, Mikey lives right next to it, so we always grab coffee, and there's this really awesome place that makes these, like...
Chicken biscuit sandwiches.
Yeah. Are just so
can you please please elaborate?
Yeah.
Please elaborate. Like, is it the biscuit and the chicken in there, or, like, what makes it so...
Chicken's biscuit.
The buttermilk biscuit with gravy and fried chicken in the middle.
Some coleslaw.
You guys cook a lot? You guys got your places to eat on the road?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. Bill's in Brighton. Brighton, England.
That's
is
the only spot.
One of the...
Bill's?
Yo, shout Bill's. Out to Sheets.
Big up the Bill's.
Yeah, what's Bill's?
Bill's is like a... It's like a really awesome like market, like a farm market place. It's like everything is organic and everything is
and
really,
it's always changing. Big lofty
yeah.
spot, you know.
They you can go in there. You go in there. It kind of looks like just like a farmer's market, but with a lot of tables. Everything is just really fresh and delicious. I mean, when you go on tour, that's the one thing that kind of blows your mind because you're eating like mustard packets and Coors Light all day.
It's a shot of mustard in the Coors Light, right?
Yeah.
Like a lime with a ketchup chaser. Awesome.
Really
so let's get all the nuts and bolts. Where can people find you? Where can people get your music?
Website, Friendster, lipsticks and cigarettes profile.
You always make Friendster. That joke, and it always works. It's a new band every week, and they haven't heard the other shows. check out our podcast.
Yeah.
Sinkane.com.
Sinkane.
You know, Sinkane Twitter, Sinkane Raw on Facebook. What else?
Well, and then
DFA Records. Yeah.
When's the release date?
October 23rd.
Can you pre-order?
Man, this should be coming up pretty soon. Chris, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I know he's listening.
Well, how about we say if they email Chris, I'll put him on the pre-order list.
Yeah.
And
he'll really enjoy that too.
Release party? Dance party?
October 23rd, we're playing a show at the Brooklyn Bowl.
Oh, perfect.
So,
fried chicken?
Oh, yeah.
So much fried chicken. Yeah. Hey, here's my question to you. What is your process of eating when you play Brooklyn Bowl? Are you a before show eater, or you gotta wait till after?
Yeah. Well, I really like their fried chicken, and I gotta do that afterwards or else.
Completely divided on this.
I'm kind of like a wingman during the set type of thing, just... You know, in between.
Yeah, I like if
get
I
greasy fingers.
Yeah, I get a dozen. I get six on table one, six on table two. But yeah, that's it's so tempting because you're there for so long and you want to dig in. But that's
yeah. I mean, it is.
That's the reward.
It is a very good place to eat.
Three more songs till chicken wings.
Yeah.
Two more songs till chicken wings.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm
at. One more song to a boozy milkshake, right?
I can only... I can't do that one. That's the ender. If I have that, then
That's on the way out. Margarita in one hand, boozy milkshake anyway. All right, one more song, then we're out.
Yeah,
then we're off to Jersey.
Off to Jersey to the aunt's house for Rosh Hashanah. Thank you guys for all coming in here. This was totally worth all the effort.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, what's the last song called?
It's called Young Trouble. This is a new joint.
Oh, and hold on, sorry. One big shout out. Tomorrow night up at Dinosaur Barbecue, Marcus Samerson and a whole bunch of Harlem chefs are doing an incredible, incredible, incredible food event. Check it out. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. All right.
I jack it up a little bit so we can hear it.
Okay.
Program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you.
For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.